Planning Board Meeting, February 24th, 2020.
Good evening. The February 24th, 2020 meeting of the Ventnor City Zoning and Planning Board will come to order. This meeting is being held in accordance with due public notice thereof and pursuant to New Jersey State Sunshine Law. Notice of this meeting was advertised in the press and the current, and a copy of same has been posted in the bulletin board of the municipal building. We're all stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, if you will, roll call, please.
Tom McAdams.
Here.
Roman Zabby Hutch.
Here.
Lorraine Salata.
Here.
Dan Smith III.
Here.
Mike Wiesen.
Here.
Peter Taco.
Here.
Tim Coop.
Here.
Greer Gaskell.
Here.
Absent are Commissioner Landgraf, Commissioner Kriebel, Tom Halpin, Jay Cook, and Wendy Bartlett.
The January 27th minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review them? Are there any comments, additions, deletions? If not, may I hear a motion and a second to approve?
I'll make the motion to approve.
Second.
Approved. Adoption of resolutions. P7-2020, P8-2020, P9-2020, P10-2020. And I have a motion and a second to approve.
Motion.
Second. Carried. This evening we have two applications. First one is of Mark and Hannah Feldman, represented by Eric Goldstein.
Michael Lario from Phil Davis Goldstein. Here we have the applicants, Mark and Anna Feldman.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening.
This is property located at 317, lot 20.02, 912 North Harvard Ave in Ventnor. What the applicant seeks to do is a one-year extension of subdivision approvals that was obtained September of 2019. Under the MLUL, they have 190 days to perfect the subdivision. Currently, they've started construction on the larger of the two lots. The home is going up. They haven't decided yet what they plan to do with the smaller of the two lots. They're waiting as construction progresses whether they want to actually develop it or whether they will allow the subdivision to expire. So as the construction is going up, they just seek a one-year extension pursuant to NJSA 40.55D-47G. It's a discretionary 1 year. If the board has any questions as to the nature of the application, I'd be happy to answer. But that's essentially what they are requesting.
Roger, any comment?
Yes. Roger, you swear from the testimony you're about to give me the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
Get that.
This request is nothing unusual. It is an approved subdivision. They're just asking to put an extension for 1 year. There's no detriment in granting this extension, in my opinion.
Counselor, any comments on this?
No, I would just echo what Roger said. The extension would go from, it looks like the prior resolution was adopted October 28th, at 190 days from that period, and the 1 year calculated from that whatever 190 days after October 28th, plus the year. So basically, when we do the memorializing resolution, I'd have to look that all out, so it's clear.
Board, any questions?
Yeah, more of a statement than a question. I remember when the applicant was here on the subdivision, and I could be wrong, correct me if I am, they were pretty clear that they were going to build another house on that lot, and I think that in many ways impacted how the board voted for the approval. But now you're saying that may not be the case.
I think if they didn't build it, it would just be more open space there, so I think that would be, we wouldn't need the minor subdivision and the variance associated with it if they choose not to. It would just be undeveloped land.
And
It's on the side. It's, I think it's a matter of as the house goes up, they want to see really what the property looks like once that house is constructed. And that'll be their full-time residence. I think they just want to better evaluate what the property will look like.
Mike, are you asking, is he asking for after the 190 days or from the time it was purchased?
After the 190, so the one year and 190 days from October 28th.
Thank you.
Any other questions, board? If not, a motion in the affirmative to approve?
I make the motion.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Roll call vote.
Tom McAdam?
I vote yes.
Roman Zabi Hutch?
Yes.
Lorraine Salata?
I did not approve it the first time around, and I still don't think it should be subdivided, so I vote no.
Dan Smith III?
No, I'm in favor.
Mike Wiesen?
I'm in favor.
I'm sorry?
I'm in favor, yes.
Peter Tocco?
I'll vote in favor.
Tim Coop?
Yes. You can include Greer, too.
And Greer Gaskell?
Yes.
Motion's been approved. Thank you very much. Next application is that of Gerald Cipollasi.
So the front yard setback to the second floor deck, is it 7 feet or is it 8 feet?
It's on this plan, it's 7 feet. It was approved at 7 feet for the second floor deck. Now, I looked at my notes over the last couple of years working with Jimmy. is that I know that one of the codes said a 4-foot setback for the second floor deck and a 5-foot for the first into the front yard setback, which, again, my book has changed and they can go 5 feet. And we've built a number of projects over the years that was set at 5 feet. So I'm a little confused as to what, if there's an internet code and there's the paper code, and again, working, I know Jimmy's not here tonight, but we're working, so don't make it even. And I did a house on Lafayette, on Reese Block, where the second floor deck is even with the first floor deck code set 5 feet into the front yard setback. And this was approved also with a 5-foot setback.
I'm unaware of that change. In my opinion, I still think you need a second floor deck setback, because the ordinance says it's an encroachment.
I saw that on the internet, but again, I was told ignore the internet or ignore that part or something. And we've been working with the 5-foot so that they both line up and down, but at least the both decks.
Who said to ignore that?
Well, again, working with Jimmy, he said that no, it's make it 5 feet instead of 4 feet. And I marked it up in my code as a note that says that 4 foot is now a 5-foot intrusion into the front yard setback. So you have a 5-foot encroachment and you have a 7-foot, obviously, right, space in that front yard. And okay. So we built
I hadn't seen that, in my opinion, it's still there.
No, yeah, I don't want to argue it, it's just that something I've been working on it and we've had projects built on through that way. So.
And then they gave you a variance for the deck roof on the second floor deck. It's not permitted, and they're proposing one to be there. So that changes the building coverage. As you're aware, the ordinance says if you have a roof, that's part of the building coverage now. I did my calculations, you're still under on building coverage, but as a condition of approval, if you are to be approved, that you have to revise the building coverage for this property. That's all I have. This is not a hardship variance. This is just a C1, C2 criteria. We have the benefits of the FYA detriments. Does anybody have any questions for me? Just go ahead and provide testimony.
Any questions for us?
Was this application brought before us before?
No.
Or is this brand new? So any approvals you got were from Jimmy before?
Well, we're good for construction permits. Yes, he reviewed the zoning. The only issue that he asked me to change was that the garage that was into the front yard setback. The garage wall lined up with the porch, which I assume was not living space, was a support for the porch. It was okay, because no, pull that line back to the building line, and then everything was approved. We got the building permit for that.
That was the one question I had, because I was on the site.
Inconsistent
with the drawing.
I didn't address that because I didn't think that was part of our application for the covered porch, so we left it alone. But that was changed. Building permits were released and the job is now under construction. With that wall pulled back and with the decks being aligned with the 5-foot encroachment as well and stuff. So am I ready to make a presentation or do you,
yes.
Can I introduce my client just to give a couple words of who he is and
I go by, I'm sorry, I'm Gerald, we go by Gerald. We've been coming down to Bentner for a number of years, our family, and we've been renting down here, and we really enjoyed it. And we saw the opportunity to find a small place that needed, that could use some help, and that's why we tore it down and tried to build a nice little place so we can have our family come here every year. So we really enjoy the area, and long term, it's for us to be here a full time resident. So. When I retire in about 10 years, that'll work out. But we really enjoy it, and I hope you see that we really value the area, and we're not trying to cause any issues here. We just want to make sure we try to build as nice a house as we can in a small place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so anyway, so our property is not as big as it could be based on the zone of the area. It's 30 feet wide, so 32 feet allowed, and the area is small, so it's kind of a smaller lot. But with our design, we meet all the setbacks, so for side yard setback, rear yard setback, front yard setback, whatever the position with the decks, and we're discussing on the units. Also, it's a two-story home. We have living, dining, kitchen on the first living floor, and then we have bedrooms, three bedrooms on the second floor. There is parking. off the street, we park two cars, which is a requirement, so we're taking cars off the street. A house is elevated to allow for that parking. It meets the FEMA guidelines, hurricane, obviously, the structure is pile foundation. So the house, you know, kind of a medium-sized house, is secure, flood resistant, you know, structurally sound, all that stuff. There's two floors, there's a small attic, but it's not separate by stairs, it's a pull-down stair, so it's a modest-sized home. Now, my challenge was to sort of a squeeze play between living space on the inside, outdoor amenities like a rear yard, rear deck, the front decks for the first living floor, and the second deck, which is really accessible by the master bedroom upstairs. Again, a squeeze play. They're not large decks. They're 5 feet in depth, enough to go outside, place a couple of chairs, enjoy the neighborhood. And that sort of issue with the second floor would be the same thing. It would be off the master bedroom, that they could come out, breakfast or dinner before bedtime. I don't want to speak this person's stuff, but
a little more space.
A little more space, you know, they have kids, they have family visiting, you know, so my thought was that, okay, they have places to go to. They have the backyard deck, the backyard, the front, first floor living deck, and the second floor deck. And if you know the area, it's a mixed bag of different kinds of homes, different shapes. Some homes look like they're built right on a property line, one of the stairs right on a property line, other ones are set back. Ours happens to be set back pretty far from the neighborhood. We're normal 12-foot requirement for the house itself. And then the deck's the 5 foot, let's call it a 5 foot deck encroachment. Our belief is that we're not really blocking anybody's views. They're open decks. And the issue is the covered deck on the second floor. And the thinking is that, you know, it's a weekend house. It is that you walk out of your master bedroom that in inclement weather, you're undercover. My in-laws live in, they just moved to Denver. They're crazy. He's 92 and my mother-in-law's like 86. They moved forward to Denver. And everything's their nuts except us. We have a place to go to now. They won't go out in a hot summer day unless they have a cover in the porch, whether it's off their bedroom, off the living room. You've been there, you know, those kids are really hot. Once you have a cover on a deck and porch, it drops that temperature 20 degrees easily. And it makes it really a nice place to be, even though it's on the second floor. It offers another opportunity for clients to enjoy all parts of the house, indoor, outdoor, covered decks or not. And we thought that we at least, it's not a hardship per se, but I think it's one of those things where we want to create a home that they will
probably only do it. We don't have to do it.
Right. And they will eventually live it full time, is what I hear from them. That's a whole house for the goal down the future. So we want to make it as amenable as possible. Make it a nice home. The covered deck, you know, it's not going to be built enclosed with the room. It's airy. It's got light handles and stuff. So it's not really blocking views put on the roof scape, but allows my clients to enjoy all the parts of the house.
So how many decks do you have here?
Three. We have the one in rear, which is a single story of the living above the dining room back. We have the one in front, and a third one, which is off the master bedroom on the second floor. There's no third floor in this.
But all the decks are covered now?
Yes. The first two, obviously the one conforms in the back, conforms the coverage. The first one, you know, we left that for the first floor. It's the second floor that we're asking for the roof floor.
I guess my point is, before tonight, you had two decks that were covered. Now you're asking for all three to be covered. And you just verified that rear deck is covered, so that you need a variance now for building coverage.
And we're within that. We're within the calculation. This is a modest size, 874 square feet. We're allowed some 900. So it all still works within it. Again, it was a balancing act between building coverage, lot coverage, size of the house itself, and then, again, these decks are not that large. They're 5 feet deep. I mean, we're asking for 7 or 8 foot deep deck is one thing, but if you look at the size of these rooms on the inside, they're not very good rooms, and they're trying to balance between outside amenities like the back, again, not to put a couple of chairs outside and enjoy the outdoor weather, and still have a decent size living space on the inside. Bedrooms, you know, they're 12 foot, they're 10 foot. The living room is the biggest room, it's 17 feet, which is, you know, I like to think I call it Metner standards, you know, it should be a nice place to gather the family stuff, and you have to combine the dining and the kitchen in the back of the house, where, you know, that has the access to the back, they go through the kitchen and through the dining. to get to the back deck. So again, it's a mixed bag of abilities to use the house to its fullest extent, and we're reaching out as we be allowed to have that house back for that third floor.
So you're saying you comply with that? Okay. Disagree. Your numbers don't include the rear deck and front deck, which are both covered now by a roof. Norman says that once that roof comes in, that counts as building code.
Now, it counts as one roof. I don't have three roofs, so I need to stack the roof so I didn't want the first floor. I mean, I'm not saying you have three roofs. You have
I'm looking
three.
Down in the sky, right. And I see right. Rear deck roof, front deck roof, and the main roof. Total that area, we have 58% building code. They're about 55%.
Yep.
Based on the setbacks provided on these plans.
Yeah. I'm just not assuming. That's what I guess I relied on the notes here that said we're still good in the coverage. But I guess that was a guess on this.
Well, look at your site plan and run the numbers real quick.
We have, we're talking building codes, right? 55%, 1,000. 31 square feet, and we have 45% of the square building itself without the decks as 847, which is 45%. So 10% of that. I don't have the numbers here. I trust her that I came up with a calculation and then I have to
So the front deck is 5 by 22. It was an extra 110 square feet. Rear deck is 6 by 27. He's got 132 square feet. So 847 plus 110 plus 132 is 1,089.
So about 60 square feet over on that
right. Issue.
So that would mean a variance.
Correct.
Yeah. I defer to Rob because he's, it's not about that, but it's just. I might not have included that course as opposed to the coverage.
So two variances, one for the second floor deck, and the second
for the three variances, one for the roof, one for the second floor deck, and one for building coverage now.
You got 58% on your belt?
Yes. Exactly.
So the reality is it's really not even compliant as Jimmy approved it.
Not according to your ordinance.
The only one thought I had was that the fact that it's an undersized lot, again, forced us to, had it been a normal size lot, this probably would have met the standards. It was 30 feet versus 32 feet. Obviously, that would have helped us had we had a conforming lot, but we tried to balance again between what would be a normal lot and an undersized lot. That this number is 61 square feet over that. We're hoping that that's something that we're going to work with.
So, rather than go with three variances, is there any way that we can get rid of at least one, two of them? Is there a piece of magic over there?
I've done
new construction, so we like to see new construction conforming,
sure.
But we also understand you're starting with a limited amount of space.
That's what I'm trying to say, is that we're working with something that we're trying to get a balancing act between working with a non-conforming size lot
right.
And still delivering a house that is consistent with
the understood, but, so the problem is now we still have those three variances. Is there any way where we can eliminate maybe not all three, but if we want to?
Well, let me ask another client. If we pull, let's say one of the porches, if we pull back a porch, like the one in the rear, I'm not going to put you on the spot.
No, but I wasn't expecting it, but I
don't know what you're saying. This is the house that was there before. This was demolished. It's very similar to what we have on the second floor, covered deck and the first floor. But this is at the ground level, not raised up for parking and stuff. So that would be a little nice.
Right. The intent there was an enclosed porch.
So that was the house that you tore down?
Yeah.
Yes,
it is. The new design is an improvement.
We tried to bring you to try to do the repairs that you just want. There's such structural damage.
Well, unfortunately, if you got rid of the second floor
roof that that two variances go away. But they're here asking for that. If that second floor deck was compliant, you only lose 22 square feet of building coverage, it'd still be over.
So say we had a four foot deep deck?
On the second floor, yes.
What's that?
On the second floor.
Is it the size of the deck or the fact that it's covered?
Covered with a roof.
Covered with a roof, so it wasn't covered.
What about an awning?
No. You still need a variance for the second floor deck, the setback.
Does an awning count as a roof?
No, not if it's retractable.
Well, what if it was like a pipe awning that's seasonal?
It's removable, no.
Because of the look of this house that they're trying to achieve something.
Could you just come closer to the microphone?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
But the look of the house that we were trying to achieve something that was similar to other, somewhat similar to other homes in Denver, but also some like a Charleston style home as well, right, to kind of combine some of that. That's one of the reasons for the second floor roof, to kind of make a uniform look.
Well, you get the sun in the back, in the yard, so why not put the awning in the back?
That's what I was going to say.
Have your Charleston roof out front.
If I was going to be forced to give an answer to a question, I would agree with that. And I guess the only other thing I might ask, John, I'm not sure if it makes a difference to the calculations. I know you had a 5 foot deck and a 6 foot deck in the back. If it was 5 foot, would it make a difference? Covered one
of the 60 feet over, right?
That's 56 square feet over.
I don't know, but
I don't give you 20 square feet long.
I'm sorry?
You still need a variance.
Oh, okay. It's not
unless, I guess, unless you get rid of the roof.
Well, get rid of the roof.
Yeah.
And that variance goes away.
Yeah. So you're saying you would have to not have the roof?
So if you don't have a roof in the back, but have a retractable awning, that would help.
We're going to have a roof in the back for half the building.
If we're able to maintain the front look, that would be great. Yeah, and then whatever's needed to reduce so that we don't require any additional variances, yes. If you accept that, we can go with that. Now, speaking
you put that roof in the back,
yeah,
right. You comply to the building.
So if you keep the roof and push it back, you're saying?
No, if you maintain the house instead of the whole width of the house, you
know? They do an awning on the other side.
I understand that.
You're talking about
it. I think the things that I should have thought of as an architect.
Well, we're right.
You're front and back.
You said that. But one's open, one's under cover. So, okay. Where the cover.
I see.
Where the entrance is.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Just need sunblock.
Put an umbrella. Where you get a table. A lot of light here. You get to pass the boat across. I
do. Oh, so you're saying, I'm trying to make sure I understand what you're saying. So you're saying that, like the roof?
So this part would be, well, I guess where the door is.
Then there's cover, that makes sense. And then open up the other half. Right.
Not only that, if you barbecue in the summer, wouldn't you want it every day?
You know, I thought about that too, but for the barbecue, because the deck didn't have access by stairs, and there's a, so we felt that we would probably go down and do the bucket underneath the deck and have to grow in that area and do that. So. I'm going to have something
to put up there, but the living space makes a whole lot of easier.
You know what, if I did get it upstairs and have it open, it might actually make sense to do that now. Would that meet the requirements for the dimensions or the...
You would eliminate the need for building coverage variance.
So the half covered deck in the rear, the two at the front, the double covers is covered.
You don't want to shrink that deck. Okay. Because
it's too
tight. Well, I didn't want to. I was just thinking of ideas. Including, I really don't want to.
I think Roger hit him on five.
I think that's acceptable. Yeah,
absolutely.
So what's the plan?
We're having a barbecue at his house.
and we're like, believe me, you're all invited.
Better wait for the vote.
Now, I think things work out for the right reasons in the end. So, yeah.
Any other questions of the board? Counselor?
Sure, just opening up the public, obviously I'm the only one person here, but anyone from the public wish to speak on this application? Seeing no one, public portion closed. And so the motion that somebody needs to make is a motion for a seat variance relief for the following: a front yard setback to the second floor deck of 7 feet or 8 feet required. The variance to permit that second floor front deck to be covered, and then the conditions will be that the applicant will make building coverage compliant and by removing all or a portion of the roof over the rear deck as the applicant sees fit, so long as they get to that 55% number, and we'll submit revised plans to show the building coverage calculation and all other conditions in the compliance report.
I hear a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Roll call vote.
Tom McAdam.
I approve the applicant, and I appreciate your investment in that. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Norman Bobby Hutch.
I also vote yes. I mean, you're trying to put in a rather nice home, compared to what was there, in an undersized lot, so we understand the conditions you're under. So the variance are understandable.
I appreciate all of
them. Lorraine Salata.
I'll vote in favor of it. It's a lovely new design, and the board always appreciates when you try to work with us and eliminate variances and try to improve the plan. Thank you very much.
Dan Smith the third.
I also vote in favor. I don't see any negative at all. You got a compliant new structure, and can't ask for more than that.
Mike Wiesen.
I think it's a great idea. Split that in half. I have an open one. It's no good. You know, unless you like sun. You know,
right.
But I don't. And I think a wonderful compromise. You've got it 55%. Did a great job. And really can love that even more now. I vote in favor of it.
Peter Paca.
I'll also vote in favor of it. And I commend the applicant for his willingness to adapt as necessary.
Thank you.
Tim Coop.
I also vote in favor and appreciate the compromise.
Thank
you. Greg Gaskell.
I vote yes and I appreciate you doing
it. Under a question. Motion is passed. Congratulations. Good luck. Thank you very much. I hope to see you.
Yep.
You bet.
Yeah. Good. So about the barbecue.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
How does it fit in? Your design will fit in with some of the newer houses across the street, so
it's the so I said, revised plans to show the revised back current bush.
Yes, and they'll fix that front setback too on the ground.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to pick it up and make it for this.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you.
All right, board, any old business?
Yes, I'm in attendance.
I had to refuse myself in the first case.
Old and late.
And so I had knowledge of this case, so I did better than I did back then.
Actually, you're not part of this.
So, other than that, you guys look good from here.
Any new business?
Parking.
Parking.
And Mark's dealing with the R7 for the future. We should be putting on our schedule, and we may have to, depending on our meeting time, we may have to add an hour. So if we have a lot of cases, so we get it, we get just an hour of our own board work to put in these particular projects as they come up. But there are any offerings that we have to get to this year, and get into those aspects. The R7 definitely needs to have a look at, and we've been talking about parking. And some made certain suggestions to it, so we want to finalize that and start getting having plans to work on it. And that's the only thing I have to say, otherwise, that looks good. have one thing that I might address to you, Jay. We had discussed about adjacent lots for additional parking for homes.
Yeah.
Any discussion on that?
Well, I don't see there's a lot of interest in it, and I think we should look at it, particularly in the areas where there is no parking, like some of the, like that Edgewater Avenue, part of Derby Avenue, where all the houses are built up on the water, and there's absolutely no chance of parking whatsoever. If you have, we have an open situation like that, then if somebody can acquire a lot across the way, or we create parking, or maybe create parking personally, I think it's advisable. Whether from a planning standpoint, if people are going to agree on that, we'll have to stick it. But I think the way to where the appropriate area is where there is absolutely no chance of getting it, and it can be created by opportunity. And that's about the only way. If there was a property can be knocked down, or a property comes up, a vacant lot comes up that can be used. It's an opportunistic area. I don't see it big, but it's there.
So the reason I ask, if someone was willing to do something like that, what would encourage them to do it if they're paying a full tax rate for their lot?
Well, yeah, that has to be reevaluated by the tax assessor. And because a property has land and assessment, land and improvements.
Right.
So there would be a land, and then there's a question of how much of the improvements, how much improvements would be considered on the property. And the city might take a look at the tax loss on it, where they have the house. But the other side of the point is the neighborhood works, better too.
I don't think that's a bad plan.
Okay.
I think you might get some opposition from surrounding areas, like a bit border.
Very, very possible.
Think about it. Would you want that to your house? Maybe it's better than the neighbor.
Well, it depends on how it was presented as parking.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't buy a lot and say, well, there's a parking lot.
No,
but I know the exact property you're talking about.
Right.
And the guy bought the last house, put the street, he tore the house down, and now he wants to use it for parking, right?
Right. And the thing is, it can be buffered. There's different ways to look at it, and there's limited. He wants to use it for himself, it's not for the neighborhood.
Right.
He has no parking, is zero for himself. So he just wants to use his own lot for himself. And that's where I think how it should go is it's your property. And you use it to service the other property, which is basically substandard.
But you may not net any more parking spaces, because if he puts a curb cut in front of it, he can park on there, then you lose two spaces in front of it.
You get four.
But they're private spaces as opposed to public spaces.
That is a discussion.
I mean, so that's a concern.
Right. Peter, you're 100% right. And so that's the wisdom of looking at these things and seeing it in net gain. Now, the other one, he's got one driveway, and he's got, there's already an opening there to get, there's two openings on that. Anyway, so nobody loses anything. And the one we were looking at, there's no loss.
There was a garage on the property.
There's a garage on the property, and then there's another entrance.
So there's an entrance off of Derby also?
Right, yeah. So consequently, there's no loss.
Remember a number of years ago, Jay, you may have been on 170 at that time, there was a house on, I think it's Amherst and the Beach, and the beachfront home, and the lot next to it is vacant, and it's just all stones. Yeah. And they wanted to use that strictly for parking, which is understandable for that neighborhood. It's difficult. Neighbors weren't happy, and ultimately the board did turn them down. They use it for parking. It's still there. It's still empty. But the people in the neighborhood weren't happy about that. That's what brought to mind the conversation.
But the other side of the point is, if you're the owner of the
property,
you have certain rights to the property.
They have construction.
And
it's filled with construction. Trucks,
right.
All the time.
Yeah. That's different.
No, but I'm saying this is a more recent event,
right.
Because there's so much construction going on in that area. There's trucks everywhere, because now I live right in that neighborhood, so I can see it. People can take their dogs there. just a car here, a car there. It's a good size lot, so, but that's the one that we did turn down quite a long time ago.
Or it could be better, instead of having an ordinance done, if they come to the board, and the board chooses a variance, and it's either beneficial or it's not beneficial. And it's the wisdom of the board.
Yeah.
I mean, rather than try to get off an ordinance.
Yeah, it's a case by case.
Yeah, it's a case by case situation.
Yeah.
I think that the board can then put its ideas into it, get some experience with it, and see how it works.
Right.
And I think maybe that's the better way to do it, rather than try and make an ordinance.
So right now, the lot we're talking about would be assessed as a vacant lot, which would have to be a lot less. If the improvements made, like putting asphalt, then
right,
the tax assessment would come in.
It's assessed for.
And then say, increase the rate.
Right.
And then you'd have an issue where the property owners would be fighting that. So I think we need to discuss that with the commission.
I think so. I think that it's just that it's a wisdom situation.
Because the other part of that is, too, to the point about having a one case by case, depending on the neighborhood, you know, sometimes visibility is not so good, so you don't want a car pulling in and out, you know, in an area that it could be a safety issue.
Right.
To make a blanket ruling is probably
not. I think it's just, it's like the board looks at case by case.
Because in some areas it's a good issue.
And then puts its own two cents into it, and it's either good or it either works or doesn't work.
So in that same scenario that we're now talking about, what if 3-4 neighbors on the water with no parking come together and say, we're going to put our finances together, we're going to buy a lot in the middle there, across the street. Then they would come here to try to get a variance to do that.
Right.
And that way they split the cost of paying for the taxes.
Right, and at the same time, you know, we go back to there, there's some issues we did on Baton Rouge Avenue. Remember that one, all the neighbors came out, and they talked. Well, that lot was there, when they were building the 8 townhouses on, was there vacant for a while, and it came up in that meeting, is that if all of those neighbors, 15 of them, who were complaining about no parking, had merged their funds and bought that, put a trust together, and made that their parking lot, there wouldn't have been an issue. And that would have been something else. That's essentially what you're talking about. So, and it goes to like the halfway house that we got to get involved with, was proposed as a halfway house. Neighborhoods come in and solve their own problems. And so that's what Roman was talking about, is just somebody solving a problem within their own backyard. Now, if it's good for the city, it's good for the neighborhood, then it's good. If it's not, it's not.
And I'm not giving it, you know, case by case is good. Is there some way of doing some, you know, what are guidelines? What are things that would be looked at on a case by case basis? Like, don't have to follow 100% of the thing. Have some buffer. Have, you know, one curb cut. Like, what are the things that you'd be looking at to be paid for?
Well, you would need to understand.
To look at
some sort of standard. Yeah.
Standard with pervious and landscaping and
lighting.
What would require a use variance?
Well, the thing is you don't want to make it, you don't want to pay for that. Right? I mean, the idea is you can use ribbons, you can use, you don't have to use solid concrete, you can use just strips of concrete to go in, you know, to stack marker or whatever you have to do. Roger, I mean, there's ways that you can use standard if it came to that. But this is not going to be, I don't think it's going to be a big, shall we say, going to occupy a lot of our time. This is something that's going to come up here and there. And when it does, it does.
There's going to be neighborhoods that really desperately need parking.
Right.
It's certainly worth opening up the discussion and make the criteria.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's my case. But
as we get into it, we can look at it more.
But I want to support what Tim was saying. We need to create a guideline saying, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that. No, set those standards up.
Or you need to do this and that.
Right. Yes. so that allow that flexibility, you know, the gray area in between. But we should establish that you can't do this, you can't do this, we want that.
I'm thinking out loud, Roger, and it could be a conditional use. You know, you get to use the phrase of conditional use, and put it that way, if you meet those conditions, they can do it. And that's it.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to use a use variance, but then it's there that...
I know, but we actually make it a conditional use if you, in use...
If they follow these standards, these guidelines...
Right, exactly.
You get approval without coming back to you.
Right.
And I'm even thinking, treat it like Maria, where it goes such a condo.
Right.
Even condo parking spaces, perhaps, but...
Well, the whole essence of it is whether it is not, there's no chance of anything. This is an alternative. And, you know, it's like the last, like that's where it's like, there is no other way. There's, you know, there is no alternative.
Jay, let me ask you, how do they work it with, on the corner of the Regency, that's parking, is that your parking lane? How did they work that one? How did they work Berkeley? How did they work the...
I think that they did it. How they did it.
They paid for the individual tenants.
Right.
Paid for that parking spot.
But it wasn't there originally.
No. It was two lots, or three lots that were created over there. And the houses were torn down. What happened on the one that I think it was on Atlantic Avenue, is they had to put a buffer in around it. They had to set up so that lights wouldn't shine into the adjoining houses and so on. They had to put certain paving up across it, or cover, ground cover, anyway. They put various conditions on it. Move to cut the entrances, that entrance and the ingress, what we call it, in and out to a certain spot. That was all delegated in the plan when it was approved.
And there's
analyzed out on that.
And there's your answer to everything.
Right.
Right.
I mean, they completely, everything that was supposed to be there was made there, including dealing with the nuisances of cars going in and out. That was discussed, and so on down the line.
Interestingly, though, with fronts, the Regency parking lot, if the cars go in the lot, it doesn't seem to me there's really been any criteria at all. But that's in front of our lot, one of the hours of Regency.
Right.
It's a very small space. That's not
some things were there, but have been there for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know. I get it. This is always for me. And you were on the board when they applied to all that?
Yes. I have all parties.
Were you seven?
No, it's a 20-year-old one.
there were two lots. High-rise buildings. There were two lots. There were three that were brought in. Where they actually took down properties to increase their parking. And in each of those cases, there was an engineer and there was a plan, there was everything that went through to do it.
Well,
there was a formal application with various.
Yes,
well, it's a good basis to start.
Right.
Because it comes to the, you know, we're saying it would come to the individuals that may be considered.
I think we just have to work with it, and we'll see how it all comes together or it doesn't come together. And that's the case. That's the point of time.
That's a lot of input from somebody in the audience.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good example of what you're trying to raise. You know, once we get something more substantive, you need that hour before and discuss it greater than that.
Exactly.
Because you never know. If somebody says one little thing triggers all that, just like this application tonight. You know, he didn't have a clue what a half of them were when he came in here. Right? They were willing to give up everything. That, you know, when he came up with that, it was a genius.
That's the beauty of this board.
Yep.
Because when this board gets together with as many individuals as we have here, I just noticed from my side, Tom's, I think you've got the same thing, is that you guys start interacting and you start feeding off each other, and the ideas come up, some good, some bad, and then the bad ones get pushed back and the good advances. And that's the beauty of this board and the way you guys work. And I, from my standpoint, if I can be quiet
And it's like, you guys work. It's a better night.
We feel the same way.
Yeah, they have to.
Well, you're less winded than when you were the chairman of the zoning board, Jay. I gotta say that.
But when everybody's together and you guys are, it really is a nice play and things get done. And I didn't know that it was with the members of the board, but I thought you should know that.
Thank you.
And that's your strong suit. And when there's few people here, when we're sparse on membership, the play is not there. But we get things done and get some good decisions too. I rest with this. May I make a motion for?
No.
You can't.
Not officially.
Okay.
All right, motion for adjournment?
Motion.
Yes, sir.
Gary. All right.